I found that the larger ones, and there's no one in particular I'm thinking of, but the larger ones who focus more dollars on marketing, on Google SEO, and making sure they're at the top of the results, the more money they have focusing on marketing, the less they have on customer service.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Passive Income MBA. Today, I'm so excited to have Josh Plave on our show today. Josh is an expert in SDIRA, self-directed IRA investing, and we're so excited to have him on the show. Thanks for being on.
Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. So Josh is a multifamily syndicator who specializes in helping investors use their retirement funds to passively invest. Through his company, Wall to Main, Josh provides all the tips and tricks needed to invest quickly, safely, and inexpensively with an existing retirement account. Awesome. So Josh, investing with a self-directed IRA, start with the basics. Why would somebody want to consider doing this?
In my past, my mind was blown when I realized that I could invest in virtually anything with my retirement accounts. I was trying to figure out what I could do with my variety of different, you know, past employers, IRAs, 401ks, things like that. And I was trying to figure out what I could do, take more control, and maybe not have it all on the stock market. And my mind was really blown one day when I saw a presentation on self-directed IRA. And then I learned that you can actually apply leverage within your retirement account. And that can really help to, you know, amplify the returns there as long as you're doing it in a controlled manner. And I learned that there's the only restrictions that the government has actually provided around retirement accounts is they say you can't invest in things. And the only things you can't invest in are collectibles like art, jewelry, cars, alcohol. You can't buy life insurance policies and you can't own shares of S corporations. But outside of that, if it's something that you think is an investment, you can go for it and you can apply, you can use your retirement funds to invest in it and invest in virtually anything you want, real estate, crypto, gold, anything, you name it, you can do it.
Okay, interesting. And so for you, when you were thinking about doing this, the main motivation was you wanted to diversify out of the stock market. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So just a bit of background. What happened was my mother and my grandfather had passed away between four and 10 years ago, between the two of them. And my mother was nice enough to leave my sisters and I with, you know, her retirement accounts and the retirement accounts she got from her father. And so it wasn't a life-changing amount of money, but it was enough that I needed to figure out what I was going to do with the funds, make sure that I wasn't putting them all, you know, on the biggest speculative stock or the next hot investment that I saw come along. And I needed to kind of figure out what I wanted to diversify into. I wanted to have more control and maybe pick people who were, you know, who I could vet myself, as opposed to investing, let's say, in Tesla stock. And then Elon Musk goes on Joe Rogan's podcast, smokes a joint, and the stock drops, you know, 40% the next day. I wanted something that was maybe a little more stable, that I had more control, and then I could vet myself, you know, face to face with the operator.
Okay, awesome. So tell us a bit more about what the mechanics of investing in it. So we know you can invest in pretty much anything. And what would you say a good starting point for someone who's thinking about doing this would be?
Yeah. So the first thing you need to determine is kind of what funds are you using? And the thing you need to get your head around is, do you have control over those funds right now? So what I mean there is, if it's with, let's say you're thinking of a retirement account right now and it's got $100,000 in it. If it's with a current employer in a 401k, there's a pretty good chance you actually won't be able to use those funds, unfortunately. They're going to be locked up by the plan's administrator. They want to have those funds under management. And you need to do what's called in-service rollover. So the plan needs to allow for an in-service rollover. And unfortunately, most plans don't allow for that. What you can do is, if you're, if you have funds from a past employer or an IRA you set up yourself, if you have funds that are under your control and not a current employer, those are ones that you can use. And essentially what you need to do is all of those funds are being managed by some sort of custodian. So it's like a Schwab, Vanguard, TIA, Fidelity, things like, or companies like this, where, you know, they have a brokerage house and they facilitate equities, stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds. That's typically what all of us have been investing in with our retirement accounts for quite a while. So those custodians won't really typically allow for alternate assets like the ones we've talked about so far. So what you need to do is you need to move those funds over to a different custodian. And so these ones, they're smaller companies, but they allow for investing in crypto and real estate and virtually anything you want. You just need to move the funds from one custodian to another. And once they're there, and you can opt for a few different mechanics beyond that, which we can get into. But once they're there, you can now make use of those existing funds and invest in, as I've mentioned, anything you want to do.
Okay. So just to clarify, so typically if someone has a self-directed IRA, which is what you typically have if you have funds from a previous employer, correct? Or if you open your own self-directed IRA separate from your 401k with your employer, that would also count correctly, correct?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So with your self-directed IRA, usually it's with like one of the larger providers, which is not a custodian for alternative investments. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure I have it straight. So then what most people would need to do is move their SDIRA or open another account under another custodian that does do these types of alternative investments. Yep. Is that correct? Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. The terms IRA, self-directed IRA, they're all interchangeable. Self-directed IRA is essentially just to kind of illustrate the fact that you now have an option of what you want to invest in. You're not just hemmed in by equities. It's kind of just a label. But IRAs are IRAs, no matter where they're going. Doesn't matter if they're self-directed or not.
Okay, cool. So what would you say if someone was thinking about doing this and wanted to, say, invest in a real estate syndication, what would you say a good amount is for them to start? Because there are some costs. So maybe we should talk about costs and then what a minimum investment might be.
Yeah, absolutely. A good starting point is whatever that minimum investment might be for, you know, we're talking real estate. So some sort of a real estate investment, they're typically in the $50,000 to $75,000 range. That's generally where I would say you should start. When we talk about costs, there's kind of two different account types. I call them flavors of accounts. They're different approaches you can take. So as I mentioned, you move your funds from one custodian to another custodian, and that has to happen no matter what to use your funds to invest in real estate. The first option is you leave the funds there. You can leave the funds at the custodian, and every time you have a new opportunity, you fill out paperwork about the transaction, you fill out details about who the sponsor is and all the information that goes with the investment. The custodian then processes that paperwork and you get charged every time that the paperwork comes in and that they have to, you know, work on it. And if you want to speed that paperwork process up, that also costs you a fee. But then they have to approve the interface with the custodian or with the sponsor. The custodian and the sponsor start speaking together, making sure that you're engaging in a non-prohibited transaction, something that's kosher. And they get your funds, you know, taken care of and moved over to the investment. The main issue I've seen with that is not only that every time there's a transaction, you have to pay a fee. The fees can be $100 to $200. And the other issue is it takes a lot of time. There are some custodians who are on top of it and they will be able to, you know, process the paperwork in a few days. I've actually seen investors not have the paperwork done in time. Say the fund's due deadline is 3-4 weeks from now. The paperwork wasn't done in time and it just never got processed. And so they weren't actually able to invest in the deal, unfortunately. That's kind of like your main issue with a custodian. The other one is the general fee structure. They charge you one of two ways. A custodian can charge you based off of the account value, and that's not how much is sitting at the custodian. That's just generally how much you have in cash or in assets or whatever. And they charge you based on the amount. So let's say you're doing a good job as an investor and you're growing your account value over time, the fee starts to climb. And so if you have, let's say, $500,000 in an account, you're looking at something around $700 annually, and it just grows from there. The other way they can charge you is by the number of assets you have within that account. And that's typically going to be between $150 and $250. If you have four investments, you might already be looking at $1,000, you know, across your account. So the other option, the other flavor of account type is, yes, you have to move the money over to a custodian, but At the same time that you've been opening that account up, you actually have a provider who's helping you open that account, but they're also helping you establish an LLC. This is called a checkbook control account. They establish an LLC in the name of the IRA, and that new IRA is able to invest 100% of the funds into the LLC. And just as you would with any other business, you can then open up a banking account and manage that LLC just like it was any other business. And you yourself can be in control. You don't have to get permission every time there's a deal. You don't have to fill out transaction paperwork. Every time that there's an opportunity, all you have to do is vet it yourself, tell the bank that you want to invest in the property, and you provide them wiring instructions and they charge you a $35 wiring fee. And I like to joke that you can find a deal at breakfast and fund it by lunch. It's extremely quick. You should probably take more time than a few hours to vet a deal, but it's really simple and it's nimble. And the nice thing is, because you're not relying on their administrative work, you're just relying on them to help at the end of the year with, you know, some administrative stuff, but they're not interfacing with them constantly throughout the year. They charge you much lower fees. So you're looking at something around $150 annually, regardless of size or number of assets held within the account.
Awesome. So you would call that checkbook control, which results in an LLC that the custodian creates. Is that correct?
Yep. Custodian creates it. You can have a lawyer create it. But essentially, yeah, the IRA owns that LLC.
Awesome. What other rules do you think folks should be? Well, actually, before we go into rules, let's just review costs. So I guess we already did kind of talk about the cost, but for the checkbook control, can you just do a little bit of a cost comparison? Checkbook versus, yeah.
Yes. So checkbook, because there's more to do. There's more structure up front. That's typically going to cost a little more on the front end. That's your main cost. So you're looking at anywhere between $400 and maybe $1,300 to establish the structure. But then ongoing annually, you're looking at right around $150 between different operators annually. When it comes to a custodian account, that's going to be a lot easier to establish. They just need to do some paperwork and establish the account. And that can either be anywhere between $0, $100, $150. You know, inconsequential. And then annually, it depends on your account size. If it's $100,000 or $200,000, you're looking at maybe $100 or $200 annually. If it's $500,000, you're looking at, you know, $600, $700. And every time there's paperwork involved, whether it's incoming, outgoing wires, you know, a new deal, if you want to close the account, those are all charged, you know, a fee. And those fees typically range between $100 and $200, depending on what the type of situation or the event is.
Okay, awesome. So super helpful. So with the checkbook control option, it takes longer and is more expensive to set up at first. Then you have lower costs going forward.
Yep. I should say that they typically take between 2 and 4 weeks to establish. A custodian account can probably be done in 2 weeks or so, maybe 2 to 4 weeks as well. It really depends on the time for the one custodian to communicate with the other and for the funds to be transferred between one another. It's easier to transact or to transfer cash, I should mention. So if you have any stock positions, you should liquidate those before you transfer funds over. But the timeline is really, it hinges on the ability for you to have one custodian communicate with your previous one.
Okay. Now, I've gone down this path of looking for custodians, and there are many, many, many hundreds of custodians.
Yes.
Are all custodians the same? What are some of the pluses and minuses of different custodians? How should one go about choosing one?
Yeah, it's a tricky game. It for sure is difficult when there's so many people in the space. So what I will say on the custodian side, I don't personally work directly with any custodians. I don't have, you know, any ties to them. And I personally haven't opened any custodian accounts. What I've found, though, when interfacing with them as myself, a syndicator, when the paperwork comes across, I found that the larger ones, and there's no one in particular I'm thinking of, but the larger ones who focus more dollars on marketing, on, you know, Google SEO and making sure they're at the top of the results, the more money they have focusing on marketing, the less they have on customer service once you've established an account. They're trying to sell you an account, make sure that they can get you as a client. And then once you're there, they're a little less helpful. They have less committed to ongoing relations. When it comes to checkbook control accounts, there's a lot out there as well. I personally have two relationships. One is with a company called Safeguard Advisors. They're who I've opened my accounts with. They're typically for the investor, I think, that will have a more diverse set of investments they plan on doing. If you plan on doing maybe some private money lendings, passive investing in syndications, maybe you want to buy a short-term rental, you know, things of that nature. And there's maybe you kind of are just looking at the next opportunity and it's not necessarily one specific thing. And you want to make sure that you're following the rules. And there are some rules surrounding all of this but you want to make sure that you're not breaking the rules. They will provide you with advisory services ongoing. So that's the more expensive option where they're helping you establish everything, but they're always going to be there for you, making sure that you've got a hand to guide you. There are other options that are cheaper. I work with a company called Rocket Dollar. It's all online. It's very fast and efficient, but they don't provide any advisory services. So I like to suggest that typically for people who they've got their bread and butter investment. They plan on doing one type of thing. It might be just passive investing and syndications, and they really just need the account. And once they have it up and running, it's kind of just copy paste. They're not looking to learn anything new. They just need to make sure they're in compliance every time, and they can just open the account and run from there.
Okay. Awesome. That's very helpful to understand different options out there. What would you say some of the other rules that people should be aware of are? I mean, I know if you're an active investor, then you can't invest in one of the deals that you're actively working on. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are these things called disqualified people. And the first one is, as you mentioned, you. So you, your retirement account and you are two separate people. You need to consider them separate. The retirement account can't benefit from your actions. You can't benefit from the investment actions of your retirement account. So let's take a look at this just on a simple single family home structure. So let's say you buy a single family home with your retirement account. They don't want you doing things like, you know, renting it to yourself, because you could do one of two things. If you wanted to have a really cheap lifestyle and you didn't want to have to pay any rent, you could benefit from your retirement account by only paying $1 a month and living relatively free. They also don't want you to, your retirement account, to benefit in ways that are against other rules. So like an IRA only has a limit of $6,000 a year for contributions. If you rented a house from your IRA, you could theoretically rent it for $20,000 a month and pump even more money into your retirement account. So they're looking to stop these types of manipulations. But then it doesn't just end there. You're not the only person that can or can't invest with your retirement account. It also involves linear ascendants and descendants, people like your parents and grandparents, your sons, daughters, grandchildren, and spouses at any level. If your, let's say your husband was a general partner on the deal and you wanted to use your retirement account to invest, unfortunately, you can't. You'd have to look for a different opportunity because they're a disqualified person. And so they would benefit from your retirement account investing in the property. And also your retirement account would benefit from them, you know, being in charge of the dollars within your retirement account. So you need to look out for those types of things. It's typically not a huge issue within syndication. If you're just passively investing, you just need to be aware of who those people are that you can't use your retirement account to invest with. And beyond that, there's not much else you need to be too worried about.
Okay. I remember you making a video about some way around this or some, yeah. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's say that you want to invest alongside your family. If you use, let's say, like I wanted to invest with my dad. He's a disqualified person. Couldn't invest with him. If we wanted to establish a holding company, and this is actually what I do with my family, if everyone's investing with their retirement accounts, so the disqualified people are the people. They're not the retirement accounts associated with those people. They're different entities. And so if you're using just retirement accounts, those aren't disqualified at all. So if everybody involved is using retirement accounts and they're putting them into maybe a holding company, you can. I've done this with my family. So, you know, if the investment minimum is $75,000, we can each put in $25,000, be, you know, invested at a lower personal level and diversify even more greatly across our entire portfolio and kind of get around these rules. It still doesn't get around the issue of if somebody else is in charge of the deal because, you know, they're still earning active income and there's no way around that. You can't have a retirement account really be a general partner who's actively managing the deal. You can't really do that within, you know, that side of things. But if you do want to invest in a you know, a quadplex or a long or short-term rental or something like that with your family. As long as it's just retirement dollars, you don't have to worry about this rule.
Okay. So, and do you consider startup costs for that LLC that you're all creating together?
Yeah. So the holding company would be a separate, you know, concept. That would be something that's different from the startup cost that I mentioned. You know, starting up an LLC can range any, it depends what your connections are. If you've got a friend who's a lawyer, they can probably do it for a couple hundred bucks. Most lawyers out there are charging anywhere between $700 to $1,500 to start an LLC, depending on the state.
Okay. That's helpful. Thank you so much for going over those concepts. Should we move to talking about UBIT and what considerations investors should take into account?
Yeah, absolutely. So generally, the two types of accounts that you can use to invest are, as we've mentioned, mostly self-directed IRAs. And those are for people who, for I would say the majority investors who, you know, just can sponsor an IRA and they want to transfer their funds over that way. There's also the solo 401k. And those are for people who have self-employment income. They have no employees. It's a small business that they're running themselves. And you can move the funds over there so that you're going to be the employer and the employee. The solo 401k when investing in residential property is totally exempt from earning any of these taxes we're about to mention and talk about. But again, it's only residential property. So anything like industrial storage, anything else like that, the taxes would still apply. So let's just, you know, keep listening. And then we'll focus now on the IRAs. And there is a taxable situation for them when investing in a leveraged asset. So the concept is unrelated debt financed income. So let's say we're buying a multifamily property. We're going to be purchasing it with 75% leverage and 25% equity. So if you put in your retirement funds and, you know, you're investing with like $100,000 and the property is 25% equity, that means that 25% of all the income that's earned by the property is earned, from your perspective, is earned by your retirement account, by tax deferred dollars. And so you know, it's tax deferred. You don't have to pay any taxes on it at all. It's the 75% from an outside source. So this is going to be a lender or a bank, an outside source that is not tax deferred. The 75% is being earned in a non-tax deferred, you know, method. And the IRS is totally okay with it. They just say you need to pay taxes on that portion. So 75% of the income that comes in will be considered unrelated debt financed income. And you have to then pay what's called unrelated business income tax, or UBIT. The nice thing is, because these non-tax deferred dollars are getting taxed, they can also make use of the same share of depreciation, operating and interest expenses, really any kind of loss. We can use about 75% of them to help offset the overall taxes that you're obligated to pay. This is kind of that boogeyman, the scary monster that a lot of people in the industry kind of lord over people's heads and say, hey, like, look out for this. You probably don't want to invest in multifamily or in real estate with your retirement account because of this. And that's kind of the issue I ran into when I first started investing personally. So I ended up building what I believe is the industry's first UBIT calculator. And I use this now for all of my investors. Whenever I have an offering, I'm able to run through the details of everything and take a look at what the tax obligation is likely to be. So I can see projected earnings, and I can also see roughly projected taxes. And what that has allowed me to do is, over, you know, running through hundreds of different deals, kind of see a pattern of what the typical taxation will look like. So what we've seen is, typically for the first 3 to 4 years in most multifamily syndications, you know, there's going to be enough losses and depreciation that can carry forward and offset the income. So you're looking at somewhere between zero and maybe a couple hundred dollars in taxes for the first 3 to 4 years. It really doesn't impact cash flow much at all. The large taxable event is going to be on capital gains. So that's on something like a sale or a refinance above your original, you know, capital account, the original investment amount. And that's when you're going to see something in the range of, let's say you invested $100,000. You're going to look at something between probably a $20,000 or $30,000 tax if you're doubling your money, $20,000, $30,000, and annualized out over 5 or 6 years, what we've seen is something around a 4 to 6% reduction in annual returns. So let's say that we're, you know, doubling our money in 5 years. That's a 20% return. Just really easy numbers. We'll keep it at that. So 20% annual return prior to taxes, you're looking at something around a 15% annual return once you have to take into account the taxes. So obviously, it's, you know, it's not great to have to pay those. But the nice thing is, the offsetting really lets you to, you know, allows you to minimize the overall tax burden. And in my mind, I think 15% is still a worthwhile investment. And that's on the conservative side of your sponsor's ability to kind of turn out the property in the direction they think they can.
So that 4 to 6% reduction that you mentioned, is that after most people are going to have to pay capital gains? So is that after the capital gains taxes as well?
Those are the capital gains taxes. That's the only thing you need to
worry. Okay. So I mean, in a normal, or if you're not using your retirement account and you just invest in a syndication that had a 20% return or double your money in 5 years, then obviously it depends on your tax mm-hmm. bracket. But would you say that, do you have like an estimate of what the returns would be reduced to after capital gains?
You mean from a cash investor?
Yes.
So the tricky thing is I was trying to figure this out so I could compare. There's so many more possible situations. The reason I was able to build a UBIT calculator is because it's based off of the trust tax table. And there's, for cash flow, there's 2 tax brackets. And then for capital gains, there's 3 tax brackets. And so it's pretty finite. When it comes to, you know, income, there's a lot more options, a lot more ways you can manipulate and change the way your income is seen. So it's much more difficult. But in a lot of situations, for most passive investors, you're going to look at some amount of tax anyways on cash. So I personally don't see retirement accounts to be that much more wildly different than operating with cash.
Okay, awesome. And now, you know, you mentioned the solo 401k. I think we would be remiss if we didn't give that a little bit more attention for all of the self-employed folks out there. Can you talk about the benefits of solo 401k and why someone would want to set that up?
Yeah, absolutely. So like I mentioned, when it comes to residential property, it's exempt from earning these taxes at all. So it retains its complete tax-free status. So let's say you double your money in 5 years, you keep it entirely. You can then take, if you put in $100,000, you now have $200,000 and you can put that into the next investment, turn that into $400,000 in another 5 years. And really, I mean, that allows the compounding growth of your capital on a completely different level. So obviously there's traditional funds and Roth funds. I personally view the Roth solo 401k as the holy grail of retirement investment accounts, because if you pay your taxes up front, it earns tax-free, and then you have access to them tax-free at any point once you're able to, you know, pull the funds. So yeah, it's really beneficial to be able to establish one of these accounts. And the way you can is if you have, as I mentioned, self-employment income. The nice thing surrounding this concept is there's no minimum threshold the IRS is to establish and sponsor a solo 401k. I obviously wouldn't get at it after it with a dollar in self-employment income, but some sort of established business, I mean, you can be selling arts and crafts on Etsy. As long as it's a consistent business, you can do it with consulting, you can do it with really anything. And as long as it's a consistent business, you have year in and year out, it doesn't have to be a high dollar amount. As long as you can generate that self-employment income, you can sponsor the plan and roll over any traditional IRA funds, you know, 401k funds into that type of account. Yeah.
Can you distinguish between the Roth solo 401k and a non-Roth?
Yeah, absolutely. So the concept goes for really any type of retirement account. Traditional funds, you're going to be putting it in pre-tax. So you earn the money and it goes straight into a retirement account before it gets added to your income. And so it earns within the retirement account, whether it's tax deferred, you know, through stocks, or you have to pay the tax, you know, in UBIT with an IRA. But with a 401k, it would still be earning completely tax-free. And then when you go to take out distributions and you want access to that capital, it gets added. Once you take a withdrawal, it gets added to your overall income for the year. It's kind of the reverse for a Roth account. With a Roth account, you earn income and it gets added to your annual income and you pay the income taxes that year, but then you move it over to the let's say Roth solo 401k. It earns totally tax-free in the meantime. And because you've already paid the taxes up front, you know, years ago, now you are able to withdraw it totally tax-free. There's no ability for the government to tax it once it doesn't get added to your income at all. And the nice thing is it's actually considered a great estate planning, generational wealth building strategy, because any kind of Roth account, when it gets, you know, inherited by your inheritors, it's a stepped up basis and it still retains Roth status. And so they have full access to it. They could withdraw the entire amount in one day if they wanted to, and it wouldn't be added to their income and it would just be wholly available to them. So a Roth account is, you know, if you're earning at a certain level and you think that you're going to be able to achieve at a higher level in the future and you're going to be paying higher taxes, you might as well pay the taxes now, earn tax deferred in the meantime, and take advantage of them down the line.
Okay, awesome. Well, Josh, we've covered a tremendous amount today. Thank you so much for being an expert in this space and sharing your knowledge. I would love to end with just a request for a business book or a personal book that has been influential in your life.
Yeah, the book that has been most influential in the last few years for me is a book called Blue Ocean Strategy. And this is, it helped me when I was starting my business and trying to figure out how I wanted to differentiate. And so the essential structure or theory behind it is expanding, you know, your typical market to more customers than your other competitors are looking at. And so the prime example they show up front is going to be a company like Cirque du Soleil. So most circus goers are looking at the same circus. You know, you got your elephants, the clowns, and you hire, you know, the high wire act. And most circuses are all vying for that same group of customers who are looking, okay, should I go to this circus or this circus? Cirque du Soleil came in and they mixed both circus and the theater and opera and ballet. And everyone who's interested in all those different types of businesses or, you know, entertainment experiences are all coming in. So now Cirque du Soleil is able to open up their customer base even greater and differentiate themselves from their competitors.
Oh, cool. Awesome. I will definitely have to check that out. Blue Ocean Strategy, everyone. Okay, Josh, tell the listeners how they can learn more about what you're doing and how they can get a hold of you. And we'll make sure to have all the links, necessary links in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. You can find me at walltomain.com. I have a ton of education there surrounding passive investing, retirement accounts, and investing in passive investments with them. I'm also offering a free PDF called Top 10 Tips and Tricks when investing passively in multifamily with your retirement account. And I kind of offer different ways that you can maybe avoid UBIT or strategize and maximize your account and make the most of what you have available to you.
Awesome. All right, Josh. Well, thanks for coming on and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.